Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 24th, 2018. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Aftermath of Centennial Brawl. Chaotic situation leads to charges for seven. Judge orders students detained. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. Seven teens will be detained until at least May 3rd, in connection with a lunch hour fight Friday outside Centennial High School that ended in an eighth youth being taken to the hospital. Six of the teens detained were charged Monday in juvenile court, while the seventh was charged in adult court because he's 18 years old. All were identified as Centennial students from videos shot by others on their cell phones and posted on social media, according to Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz. School officials helped police make the identifications, she said. The six teens under age 18 appeared separately in court on Monday. Two faced charges of aggravated battery, and the other four are charged with both aggravated battery and mob action. The fight, which actually evolved into several fights among the teens being detained, appeared to be linked to two gangs that have been a part of previous problem behavior at the high school, Reitz said. A 10-second video that circulated on social media after the fight showed at least two teens squaring off and one of them falling and hitting his head against a brick wall while the other continued to punch him. The youth who hit the wall was unconscious after school officials broke up the melee and called police. Other teens involved in the incident had run away before police arrived and were picked up later, Reitz said. The injured youth was taken to Carle Foundation Hospital and is recovering, she said. One of the teens, identified as an 11th grade gang member, was said to have started the incident by texting a challenge to one of the other teens, Reed said, and others joined in at various points. This was a very chaotic situation, she said. Judge Heidi Ladd said it was necessary to keep each of the six teens, in detention pending further hearings to protect others. It was a very dangerous and violent incident, she said. The six charged in juvenile court are being represented by court-appointed attorneys since their family members indicated they can't afford to hire attorneys on their own. Ladd set the next court appearances for most of the teens for May 3rd. The 18-year-old accused of taking part in the fight faces charges of aggravated battery and mob action in adult court. He was identified as Jack Ngo, N-G-O, and provided an address on the 900 block of Trailway Drive in Champaign. The next headline reads, Missing Person. Police search for 76-year-old man. This article is written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Urbana. Police are looking for a 76-year-old man who was last seen Monday afternoon at Carle Foundation Hospital. According to an Urbana police report, a person at the hospital reported that the man had been missing since 2:46 p.m. on Monday. Police have been coordinating with the hospital staff to search the grounds and the area around the hospital. The missing man, Albert, also known as Gene, G-E-N-E, Mose, N-O-E-W-S, Albert Gene Mose, has dementia and no ties to the Champaign-Urbana area. Police described him as a white male, 5 feet 8 inches tall and bald with a heavy build. He was last seen wearing a black jacket, gray pants, and black shoes. Police said it is unclear whether Mose has any cash with him. He has no access to a vehicle or a bus pass. Anyone who has contact with him or has seen him should call 911 or METCAD at 217-333-8911 or Urbana Police at 217-384-2320. The next headline reads, Champaign County Nursing Home. Panel says sale offer meets their conditions. The next step, meeting with County Board. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Urbana. The joint offer from two Evanston-based firms to purchase the Champaign County Nursing Home got an endorsement Monday night from a special evaluation committee and was forwarded to the Champaign County Board. The vote was one more step toward the potential sale of the nursing home next month, but not a recommendation that the county-owned facility be sold to a private operator. The Evaluation Review Committee, in a 7-2 vote, said the offer from Extended Care Clinical LLC and Altitude Health Services, Inc., was viable and met the requirements for a proposal set out by the county board last year. The two firms, which jointly own and or operate 18 nursing homes, most of them in the Chicago area, have offered $11 million for the county nursing home in East Urbana. The offer was the only one the county received in February after issuing a request for proposals. The next step in the process to sell the nursing home is a May 9th meeting where representatives of the two companies will take questions from county board members in an open session. Following that step, the county board is scheduled to vote May 24th on whether to sell the home. Doing so would require 15 affirmative votes from the 22-member board. Advocates for Sale said last week that they had only 13, 10 of which are from the board's GOP block. Voting to forward the offer to the county board Monday night was Evaluation Committee members Jim Goss, G-O-S-S, Robert King, Claudia Lenhoff, Jim McGuire, Alan Nudo, Lynn Barnes, and C. Pius Weibel, who also is chairman of the county board. Voting against recommending the proposal were Kathy Emanuel, a longtime member of the Nursing Home Advisory Board, and Stephanie Furtado, a county board member. After the meeting, Emanuel said she is not opposed to selling the nursing home, but said she was uncomfortable with recommending the extended care Altitude offer. "I thought the response was adequate, but not as comprehensive as I expected it to be," she said. She said she was concerned about the level of services the firms would offer at the Champaign County home, their staffing levels, and who would manage the facility. "They had the amenities in terms of facilities, but they didn't have the amenities in terms of services," she said. "They don't have adult daycare. They don't have dental services. They didn't have programs that we have here and which I would like to see continued. And it wasn't clear who would manage it. Even though they're coming in as partners, it was sort of left open to who would manage it. You don't really know what you're getting." Furtado noted that while the amenities were nice, "I was also concerned that they were entirely empty." But most of the other committee members said they were impressed with the operators after a tour last week of three of its homes in the Chicago area. "I thought that compared to our nursing home, they were equivalent to or better," Weibel said, of the three facilities. "I came away more impressed. I had been impressed from the get-go. This didn't change my mind either way," Goss said. "It was everything I expected and more." Nudo, a former county board and nursing home board member, was the most effusive. "I don't look at this as being only one way out. This is a good way out. This is a good way to preserve 243 beds. And this is a good way for the nursing home to continue, which is my goal," he said. "This is not an emergency catch-all. This is a great and viable candidate who has been in this business for a long time." If the county board votes next month to sell the financially troubled home and its millions of dollars of debts, county officials say they hope to complete the sale by July 31st and turn over ownership on August 1st. The next headline reads, Suburban Express. Lawsuit. Bus firm harassed, discriminated. Attorney General Madigan, comply or be shut down. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Champaign. 35 years after starting a bus company to take on Greyhound, Suburban Express owner Dennis Toppen, that's T-O-E-P-P-E-N, Dennis Toppen, faces a federal lawsuit from the Illinois Attorney General seeking to shut down his company for alleged discrimination and harassment against its customers. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan said she hopes a lawsuit and motion for a temporary restraining order she filed Monday force Toppen and Suburban Express to either comply with the law or go out of business. "My lawsuit alleges that Suburban Express has long been engaged in illegal discrimination and harassment against college students in Illinois, particularly University of Illinois students and their families," Madigan said at a press conference Monday in Chicago. The lawsuit alleges that Suburban Express has discriminated against customers from China or other Asian countries through its advertisements, including one sent in December that listed its benefits, including "Passengers like you. You won't feel like you're in China when you're on our buses," quote unquote. That email ad was condemned by University of Illinois and other officials for being racist. Days after it was released, Madigan issued a subpoena for documents, records, and information that would help determine whether the company's policies and practices violated the Illinois Human Rights Act, which states that public accommodations cannot be denied to a person or group of people based on certain factors, including race and national origin. Suburban Express apologized for its ad and later for its apology, which had also been criticized. Toppen said Monday he is reviewing the complaint. "We take this unfounded assault on our reputation seriously, and we intend to defend this lawsuit vigorously," he said in an email to News Gazette Media. UVice spokeswoman Robin Kaler said she isn't surprised by the allegations. These are the types of accounts our students have been reporting to us for quite some time, and they match the interactions many of us have had with this organization, Kaler said in an email. Marketing efforts that are offensive, bigoted, and insulting are in direct opposition to the values of the university. The lawsuit alleges that Suburban Express and Topin have violated various state and federal laws protecting customers and their civil rights, and seeks an order requiring Suburban Express to pay compensatory and punitive damages. That includes up to $10,000 for each act of unlawful discrimination under the Illinois Human Rights Act, and up to $50,000 per deceptive act or unfair practice, and an additional amount of $50,000 for each act or practice found to have been committed with intent to defraud under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act. 182 pages of exhibits. The 39-page complaint details various alleged acts of discrimination by Suburban Express and Topin, including denying credit cards from zip codes with high Jewish populations, instructing employees to avoid handing out coupons to certain students who appeared not to speak English well, and recording a YouTube video in a UI dorm while complaining about the lack of English speakers and mocking Asian accents, saying, "No English." The lawsuit also takes aim at the company for allegedly attacking customers on Yelp, on its page of shame, quote-unquote, and through scores of lawsuits filed in an inconvenient location, Ford County, while failing to redact customers' private information. He has also created and maintains pages on his website dedicated to smearing individual customers with horrible insults, including slimeball and dishonest little scumbag, Madigan said. His posts often include a person's home address, email, and phone number, and in some cases also includes pictures of the customers and their homes. The lawsuit includes 182 pages of exhibits filled with screenshots of Yelp comments on negative reviews, the page of shame, an internal list of banned customers, copies of the email advertisements' emails, and a copy of the contract agreement, or contract customers must agree to. This contract says, "Online disparagement will not resolve any problem you may have, and it may lead us to refuse your future business," according to a screenshot included in the lawsuit. Topin fires back. The lawsuit alleges that this language violates the U.S. Consumer Review Protection Statute, which prevents form contracts from prohibiting reviews. This form contract language is not simply an idle threat, the lawsuit says, citing Suburban Express's ban on certain customers for negative reviews on Yelp, Reddit, and other websites. Topin said his pushback on negative reviews doesn't constitute harassment. The complaint seems to largely criticize instances where we have fought back against false claims made on review sites and by online detractors. Defending ourselves against online harassment does not constitute harassment of the harasser, he said. He said that the complaint also seems to demonstrate a lack of any sense of humor on the part of Attorney General Madigan. Tongue-in-cheek posts like the picture of the bowing passengers cannot reasonably be inferred to mean that we have something against certain customers. He's referring to a September 2017 advertisement showing a picture of passengers bowing with the caption, "Bowing not required." The lawsuit alleges that this ad singled out people of Asian origin for ridicule. And now let's take a moment to look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Zule and his column on the weather front. Today, 64 degrees, mainly cloudy, a little rain in spots early. Northerly winds 6 to 12 miles per hour, chance of rain 40%. Overnight, mostly cloudy, north wind 7 to 14 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 61, the low is 44. Partly cloudy, north wind 10 to 18 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, mostly clear. Thursday, the high will be 66, the low will be 36, mostly sunny. Friday, the high will be 59, the low is 44. Partly sunny, cooler, a shower in spots early and late. Chance of rain is at 40%. And Saturday, the high will be 65, the low will be 38, and it will be partly cloudy. The next headline reads, University of Illinois, do chief portrayers violate no protest rule? This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Urbana. Professor Jay Rosenstein plans to ask the University of Illinois Academic Senate to vote on a resolution calling on the U of I to stop Chief Illiniwek appearances at campus sporting events. He'll do so over the objections of Chancellor Robert Jones, who was concerned about losing the trust of chief proponents just a few weeks after his first campus critical conversation on how to move forward without the chief. The resolution calls on State Farm Center and Memorial Stadium personnel to treat chief appearances as protests, which aren't allowed at those facilities. The chief appearing is clearly an action of protest against UIUC's decision to remove Chief Illiniwek from the court and from the playing field in 2007, the resolution says, adding that UVI personnel should therefore enforce the no-protest policy and not allow a Chief Illiniwek character to appear. Although we've made significant progress in the last couple weeks, this thing is a long way from being resolved, and I'm greatly concerned about any action that may be perceived as a violation of the trust and the confidence that we're trying to build around one of the most divisive issues in the history of this university, Jones said at Monday's Senate Executive Committee meeting. Rosenstein argued that by allowing chief appearances to continue, the university is violating the trust of chief opponents. Where does the issue of trust fall between the promises that this institution has made to its Native American students and faculty and other people of color over the past 20 years, Rosenstein said. I just don't understand how, in order to gain their trust, we have to not do what we did, which is get rid of the mascot. The U of I Academic Senate had been scheduled to discuss the resolution at its March meeting, but Rosenstein withdrew it to make technical changes. At Monday's Executive Committee meeting, Rosenstein said he plans to present the resolution at next Monday's Academic Senate meeting. What this resolution asks for is to enforce a policy that's been enforced for decades selectively against only one side. Nobody knew there was such a policy until a group of people decided they wanted to come out and protest against the chief, he said. There was no vote Monday at the executive committee meeting, which could only request that Rosenstein withdraw the resolution, something he declined to do. Jones, who said he spends up to 80% of some days dealing with the chief issue, argued the resolution would not be effective. The only way we're going to get to the point where there will be no longer any appearances is through thoughtful conversation and negotiation and dialogue, he said. You can pass a resolution every month, every time you meet for the next year. And my observation in terms of how strongly people feel about this, people are going to dig their heels in, and it actually may end up undermining and regressing us relative to progress. At Monday's meeting, U of I spokeswoman Robin Kaler said the next step in the chief conservation would be a charrette. Held from 4 to 6 p.m. on May 1st in the Illini Union South Lounge, where the top conclusions and findings from the first meeting will be posted on the wall. The chair will be an open house for the public, who will be invited to provide their notes and thoughts on the various findings. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Senior Will Little's entertaining Snapchat story about Tuscola's day at Busch Stadium ended abruptly late Sunday afternoon when rain washed out the much-anticipated high school game against Clinton. Our guys put a ton of effort into having this experience, Tuscola coach Duff Howell, H-O-E-L, said. They all understood that rain could pose a problem, especially this spring. Howell said Tuscola is working with the Cardinals to reschedule. Sunday's trip to St. Louis, however, ended on a high note. Our players that are Cup fans felt it was a wasted day, Howell said, up until we pulled into the Golden Corral for dinner. Next to take over our popular Snapchat account, Oakwood senior Kesley, K-E-S-L-E-Y, Blackford, who will show off her Vermilion County High School on Thursday. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. Online audience. What was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,139,207 page views. The three top stories: 1, early morning crash claims Champagne man; 2, rural Danville man killed in single vehicle crash east of city; 3, youth hospitalized from fight outside Centennial High School. The three top sports stories: 1, Illini still searching for an identity; 2, on Illini volleyball transfers, E.J. Lydell and the AAU scene. And 3, it's just the beginning for DeMonte Williams. The three top videos: 1, Crime Stoppers, Walmart robbery; 2, Collins Best of the Bunch, April 16th, 2018. 3, Pontiac at St. Joseph Ogden, softball highlights. And the three top photo galleries were 1, the Libman Company Tour, 2, High School Softball Fisher versus Unity 2018, and 3, High School Soccer St. Thomas More versus Mahomet Seymour. And in history, in area history from 1918, William Yount, that's Y-O-U-N-T, of near St. Joseph, who served 6 months with the 5th Canadian Battalion in France, is en route home after suffering a physical disability. He was wounded twice in the Battle of Vimy Ridge in northern France. In 1968, the Champaign Plan Commission recommended proposed downtown street improvements, part of the city's development plan. Among the ideas, closing Neal Street between Church Street and University to create a superblock bounded by Walnut Street, University Avenue, Randolph, Church, and Main Streets. In 2003, here's a tip for searching Google that you can be sure is a good one. Don't ask, what is the capital of Illinois? Instead, type, the capital of Illinois is, into the search field, so Google goes looking for web pages containing that phrase, which are likely to end with Springfield. In other words, as Craig Silverstein put it, always phrase your query in the form of an answer. Why is that advice you should take? Silverstein is the director of technology for Google, which in 4.5 years has become the dominant way of finding things on the ever-expanding web. And in international history, today's highlight. On April 24, 1800, Congress approved a bill establishing the Library of Congress. The next headline reads, Jim Dye's column. All downhill after great election night. Charges filed in county where judges misbehave. Be careful what you wish for because you might get it. Just ask Belleville lawyer Ronald Dubert. That's D-U-E-B-B-E-R-T. He was elated in November 2016 after an upset election victory to the position of circuit judge in St. Clair County, located just across the river from St. Louis. Looking back, it's just about the worst thing that could have happened to the guy. Roughly 18 months after being sworn in, the 55-year-old Dubert never spent one moment presiding in court. On top of that, his future prospects as a judge aren't all that bright either. That's because Dubert has been assigned to administrative work while a criminal case against him proceeds. If that isn't bad enough, Dubert last week was named in an ethics complaint filed by the state's Judicial Inquiry Board that alleged he lied to police officers who were investigating a murder case. Yes, you read that right. A murder case. Lord, few people know the troubles Dubert has seen. But the people of St. Clair County and its neighbor Madison County are no strangers to curious goings-on in what passes for their judicial systems. St. Clair and Madison counties are the judicial equivalent of open sewers, known nationally as hell holes, where plaintiffs' lawyers run amok and judges misbehave. In recent years, one judge there died of a heroin overdose, yes, a heroin overdose, while another was shipped off to federal prison in connection with a variety of drug-related wrongdoing. Indeed, it was the low esteem in which the St. Clair County judges are held that led directly to Dubert's election. Here's what happened. 3-seated circuit judges, John Beresevic, Robert Lachienne, and Robert Haida, were scheduled to run for re-election on a retention ballot in 2016. Each feared he would not be able to collect the required 60% majority vote. So all three tried to game the retention system by submitting fake resignations to their posts, and then filing to run for election in a traditional campaign. That move meant each needed just 50.1% of the vote, not 60, to remain in office. On election day, however, Republican Dubert barely defeated Democrat Beresevic, while Democrat Lachienne squeaked out a win over his Republican opponent. Lachienne has since died. The third candidate, Haida, ran without opposition. Dubert was sworn into office in December of 2016, but he quickly ran into trouble after news reports revealed that he had, for a brief time during the campaign, shared his residence with an ex-convict who was a longtime personal friend. Then there were more reports that Dubert had proposition clients offering to trade reductions in fees for sex. Finally, in late December, circumstances careened totally out of control. Dubert's ex-roommate was allegedly involved in a murder. When police came to speak with Dubert, he allegedly lied to them during a December 31st, 2016 interview. about his recent contacts with a suspect, who was 21-year-old David Fields of East St. Louis. Here's the tally of Dubert's woes. While Fields faces a murder trial, Dubert has not been charged, as police requested, with obstruction of justice for misleading them. The state appellate prosecutor's office is handling that inquiry. Dubert has been charged with both felony and misdemeanor offenses in connection with alleged sexual misconduct involving a former client. That case is expected to go to trial this summer. Dubert has also been charged by the Judicial Inquiry Board, which prosecutes cases involving judges' misconduct. He faces a trial before the Illinois Courts Commission, the body that acts collectively as the judge in misconduct cases. If found guilty, penalties range from suspension to removal from the bench. David Fee, F-E-E, the JIB lawyer who is handling the case, estimated that it will take several months before it could go to trial. It would be no great surprise if it took much longer. Dubert is charged not only with lying to police during a recorded interview conducted during the murder investigation, but also testifying falsely on two occasions before the JIB hearing panel. Though he has yet to preside even for 1 minute in a courtroom, Dubert is charged with engaging in conduct that was prejudicial to the administration of justice and bringing the judicial office into disrepute. Dubert has largely declined to comment against the various controversies, speaking mostly through his lawyer, but he has said that he's been falsely accused and victimized because he's both gay and a Republican in a traditionally Democratic county. The next headline reads, second candidate jumps into county board fray. This article is based out of Champaign and is written by Tom Kachik. A second candidate is interested in the Champaign County board seat being vacated by Champaign Democrat Josh Hartke. Charles Young, who ran unsuccessfully for a county board seat last month, said Monday he would like to be appointed to the District 6 seat that Hartke said he will resign effective April 30th. Young, a retired University of Illinois education historian, joins current board member Patsy, that's P-A-T-T-S-I, Petrie, P-E-T-R-I-E, who also lost in her bid for re-election in the March 20th primary election as a candidate for appointment to the board to represent the Central and Northwest Champaign District. Mike Ingram got nearly half the votes cast in the three-way Democratic Party primary, collecting 1,019 to 786 for Petrie and 245 for Young. I have a strong interest in the position, Young said, and I'm pro-union and pro-nursing home. Mariam R. Rahim, recently re-elected as chair of the County Democratic Party, said she hopes to call a meeting of precinct committeemen within the next 7 to 10 days to choose Hartke's successor. We'll fill it through our process, R. Rahim said. I think there are 6 to 8 committeemen in that district. There's lots of work to be done on the county board, and we want to fill this position right away. There's a sense of urgency here. Big decisions coming up. Among them is the position sale of the county nursing home to a private operator, a move that Hartke has opposed. R. Rahim said there's still time for others to seek the appointment. I'd like to see if anyone else is interested, she said on Monday. Generally, District 6 includes everything south of Bloomington Road, west of Prospect Avenue, north of Kirby Avenue, and east of Duncan Road. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 24th, 2018. We will continue on with Part 2 of the News Gazette shortly, so stay tuned and stay with us. We thank you very much for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful day.